All right, we're back for another episode of The Art of the Punt, and we're here with the practitioner of the punt, the great Dr. Turf, or your legal name is John Rothfield.
Yes, Rich.
Yes.
Mum used to call me John.
thank you for coming in. So, yeah, we're trying to arm people with the tools and the fundamentals to improve their punting. You've been in the punting game a long time.
Yes, I've done a lot of form over the years.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder whether there's only so much form you can do, but I'm still trying.
Still trying.
Particularly, when you come to this time of the year, it's you're getting reinvigorated, you know, by the quality all of a sudden jumps and gets a bit testing during winter.
Yeah. So why don't we just go back and if you can paint a bit of a picture of where you've sat in the great game for all these years, take us right back to maybe some mentors or something that taught you how to punt back in the day.
Well, right back. I mean, my dad was a punter. You know, he bet on horses and played poker every Monday night. So I was introduced to the races at a very young age. My mum bet. She was a complete hack at it. I remember the SP runner used to come around every Friday and collect off my mother. So I was introduced to the races at a young age and sort of it got me straight away. And like most, I think, I was just a complete mug. I was a mug from when I first started betting in my early teens all the way through to my early 20s. And then I had one of those sliding door moments. I mean, I love betting and I thought I studied the form guide, but I didn't. And I thought I knew something and I knew nothing. And I had a sliding door moment where I met a guy who mentored me, tutored me. I, in return, laboured for him. And we are going back a long time here. You know, really we're talking, you know, mid to late 70s. And I was lucky to run into somebody who was a professional punter. And he basically taught me, not everything he knew, but most of what he knew, I think. And I've never, you know, I don't know where I'd have been if I hadn't met him.
And was he a significant player in the game? Did he sort of?
He was. He was very well known.
What was his name?
His name was John Duncan. He was he was known as the Colonel.
Yeah.
And some of his punting mates are still professional punters.
Yes.
I mean, he was mates, you know, with the, you know, the Gary Roberts and the Barry Longs and these guys, they're still all gambling. Unfortunately, John died young. You know, he got a horrible sort of cancer and died at a horribly young age. But, you know, I had been working for him and with him for quite a few years at this stage. So I was lucky and he basically taught me everything I knew. You know, I mean, we all read Don Scott's Winning, you know, and Winning More, I think, was his second book, was a clever name for his second book. We all sort of got the basis of, you know, how to do form, how to rate races and the rest of it. But to have the practical guiding hand of a, I consider him a complete genius. I mean, every now and then he said, this will win. And it didn't matter whether it was 6-4 or 10-1. You know, he was a death adder when they really liked something. And of course, everything was different then. The markets you bet into was different. And, you know, there was such limited form available to the average punter. There was no form available to the average punter. What, you know, you had, you know, your Herald Sun form guide here in Melbourne. You had the Babe Ruth, the Truth, which had a good form guide. And of course, Sportsman, which was a little bit more technical, but didn't have any comment in it, just had form.
But that was an advantage to you, wasn't it?
Like the, Well, it was for somebody like myself under John's tutelage, because we, like I'm sure all of the professional punters at that time, had card systems, and the card system was the database.
And the card system was its, how exactly did it work? Was it basically when a race came up, you'd be like, so you could go and pull that horse and go, right, here.
Correct.
But it's the same and as a database in today's world where you type it in and it brings up all the
instead of the Herald Sun form guide, which had four runs or three runs, and the Babe Ruth might have had five runs, this horse, this card had every run of every horse, the track condition, whether there was tempo in the race. And of course, the tempo at the time was, a lot of that was your eye. So it was sophisticated beyond belief for the time. And then eventually when Sky Channel came in and we found a bloke at Sky Channel and we ended up having to put, so I was punting professionally at this stage, and we ended up having a dish on my roof. So then we had the ability to record races, and what a huge advantage you had, because no one else had a database, no one else had, you know, videos of races, particularly midweeks. I mean, you could actually go to the track and buy tapes, which we did at the time as well. You know, you'd buy your meetings off blokes that had vans at the racetrack. So, you know, progressively technology sort of took over, and it worked its way to the point where we're at today, where everybody has got everything.
Mm.
Everybody has got a database. Everybody's got every race.
Mm.
You know, you can go to a WSP site and get video replays, let alone the TAB website or racing.com website or Racing New South Wales. I mean, and there's form and videos and comments everywhere now. Mm. But we were part of the evolution of that as technology crept into the industry. So the advantage dwindled, you know, like, you know, was diluted for sure. But there were a long period of time where if you had this sort of stuff at your disposal, you had an edge.
Yes.
You had a big edge.
Yes. And do you feel like that edge is very much diminished for someone like yourself now?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's twofold. Of course, everybody else has it as well.
Yes.
But also, and it's, you know, it's really relevant, and the markets we bet into were incredibly competitive markets.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't unusual that the best flak was under 100%. And for those of your followers who understand the percentages, to bet into a market of 100 under 100% is, my God, you know,
luxurious,
like what an advantage.
Yeah.
So they were the conditions that we, you know, punted in.
Yes.
And it was halcyon days compared to the difficulties you have about finding some value these days.
And so has the way you apply yourself to doing the form changed much since you were doing it when you were in your 20s and 30s and betting for a living?
Well, I remember, and this was, I think, just courtesy of Don Scott, was I think his manifesto was to do your own markets to 90%. Was that right? Mm-hmm. I think it was 90%.
Yep.
Well, you can't. If you did a market to 90% now, you'd never bet, would you?
Mm.
You wouldn't have one bet the entire year. So you have to modify it. You have to be, you know, cut a little bit more slack. And if you want to do 100, 105, you know, even 105 is not right.
No,
you
know, getting a bit, 105 is not quite sharp enough, I think.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So, do I do markets anymore like I used to? No, I don't. But, you know, I also think in your head, You know what a market is. It's like I don't need to look at sectionals all the time either.
Yep.
You know, I just think after watching racing for 50 years, you're pretty confident about what the tempo was, you know, between the 1200 and the 800 compared to the 800 and the 400. You just know, you know, you just, because you've watched it for so long.
Sounds like you've got a pretty simplistic way of doing the form, which is good because most people are watching don't have a whole lot of time to do the form. So it's Friday today.
Yeah.
You've got a great meeting tomorrow on Saturday, obviously.
Yeah.
Talk us through where you're at with doing the form for tomorrow. When did you start doing the form? Obviously, acceptance has come out on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, of course, back in those days, the fields came out on the Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, we've now had Wednesday acceptances for quite a while. But since they've come out on a Wednesday, I look at the cards, and at the moment it's 9 race cards, but it'll be back to 10 soon. I will always look at the two worst races. Just they look to me to be the worst races. They're usually the staying race,
yes,
the mile and a half race, and maybe the two-year-old races because they're easy to do, really, two-year-old races. So I look to try and knock over the first two or three on the Wednesday and then get into the guts of the meeting Thursday and Friday. But you're always reassessing, particularly with weather.
Yeah.
You know, like this particular week where you and I are talking here, I mean, I walked Caulfield on Thursday morning and it was bone dry, dry. But the weather report is it 6 mil today and 9 tomorrow or 7 today and 9? I don't know. 15 mil of rain is going to hurt that track. So you're always being prepared to be flexible with what you think.
So track condition is a big thing for you?
Absolutely it is. The track manager in Melbourne, I think our tracks are the best in the, I'm not saying the world, but I think they're the best in Australia. Our track managers are fantastic. But, you know, they're on TV on Friday and Saturday talking about what they think the track will do.
Yep.
Marty Simon at Moonee Valley is always spot on. He said last week at Moonee Valley, track's a lot pretty soft, you know. I'm not sure the inside will be the place to be. And, you know, these guys are very open and forthright and accurate. So what I'm saying is that I think the world knows what I know. You know, I just happened to walk it yesterday, and I saw it from my own eyes. But, you know, I think, you know, Tim Buddy, whoever's in charge at Caulfield at the moment, will be on air tomorrow morning saying just that. If it rains, it may not hold up on the inside.
And will that mean that you won't bet on the meeting at all?
It won't. No, no. I mean, the jockeys are smart, aren't they? Because we see them, they get off the fence. If they think it's inferior, they get off the fence until race nine, when something sticks to the fence and kicks up through the inside and wins and makes a fool of you. But, yeah, I don't think you have a huge advantage with that anymore. Everything's public now.
Okay, so let's go back to your routine. So Wednesday comes, you get rid of the races that don't look that good to you. So let's say that's two or three.
What do you like with staying races?
We'll see. What I do is it's all completely computer-based,
right,
algorithm-based, so the computer kind of sorts it out for me. And, you know, when I'm betting, it's just, you just put it on, you plough through it.
So, well, I get the rubbish out the road. I say rubbish in a, in a positive way. My first port of call with every race, I pull out race five, my first port of call is a speed map.
Okay.
That's what I do. That's just me. Maybe people are different. Maybe people do other stuff. I want to make an educated guess as where they're going to be on settling down.
And just to quickly establish, you only bet in Victoria as well, don't you?
I do, yeah. I've never, I mean, I have caught in Sydney and maybe Brizzy or every now and then, for instance, but I only do Fulham and Melbourne.
Yeah, because you find
it takes me all week. You know, maybe when I'm sitting there on the Saturday when the races are on, I might have a peek at the provincial meeting in Victoria.
Yes.
But I would never, ever do the form in a Sydney race or an Adelaide race or a Brisbane race, ever. You know, in 50 years, I've never done it, you know. So, no. So my first task every day, every week, every year is do the speed map for the race. And, you know, a little, it's educated guesswork because you're just, you know, horse misses the starter neck. Horse jumps a neck in front. Things obviously change and they're fluid. And I know there's computer-generated speed maps, but I don't really... I'm not sure how much human interference they take into account. For instance, a jockey might be replaced by a three-kilo apprentice, you know, and they generally saw them out and lead on them, you know. And if there's two kids, there might be a lot more pace than you think there's going to be. So you've got to be flexible with that. You've got to take note of jockey changes. You might have been, you know, without naming names, there are negative jockeys, you know, in every jurisdiction that, you know, seem to not show a great deal of aggression, particularly, you know, early in a race. And then a horse might be replaced by a jockey like Jamie Carr, who just gets them out of the barriers. She just gets them out. She gets horses who are not great barrier horses, she gets them out. So you
often, when you're doing the speed map, you'll have a look at who's on.
100%. Yeah. I mean, looking further on in the form, looking at jockey changes is, I think, an underestimated factor.
Yep.
Jockey changes. I mean, you know, good jockeys get beaten on, win on bad horses, and bad jockeys get beaten on good horses. I mean, it's an old adage, but, you know, you've got to monitor jockey. Of all the factors, and you go through so many when you're doing the form for a race, that's a big one. As are barriers and, you know, tempo. You know, you start with your speed map, and that gives you some indication of where they'll be in the race. And when you take that into account with what you perceive the tempo could be, affects their chances. I mean, if they've got to go back because they're not great barrier horses and there's not much tempo in the race, you know, you mark them down. Obviously, you mark them down because their task of sprinting off, getting into the race off a slow pace is just more difficult.
And do you generally like being on front markers or back markers?
Well, you know, Australian racing is front runner driven.
So you got your speed map. What's the next? Where do we move to then?
I think your speed map and your tempo, and then really it's a case of going through them, isn't it? You know, getting rid of the ones that can't win.
Okay.
And just, it's nice putting a line through horses. And then in your
and
own...
What would make you think that a horse can't win?
Well, a lack of ability is probably a good place to start.
And is that based purely off that you look at them and they're running... sixth or seventh in a lot lower
quality
race than what they're
in. Plenty of them can't win. You know, I mean, how many 100-to-1 shots win in town these days?
Not many, yeah.
So I think you can eliminate a lot of horses. Mm-hmm. Not, you know,
In percentage terms, you roughly know how many horses you might eliminate per field?
Well, I think it'd be nice to say you get rid of half of them.
Yep.
You know, and it makes you do your market. You know, if you've got to get your market to 100, you've got to get rid of horses.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make, you know, we make wrong decisions all the time.
And what price do you mark them? Are they all instantly
100 to 1? Well, I don't sit there and do a 100% market anymore. Uh-huh. I don't. I mean, I did it for 30 years. I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But I'd mark them 100 to 1 or mm-hmm. you'd be brutal on them. Mm-hmm. You know, 50 to 1, even though they might be 8 to 1.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to try and get that market
so
you can stick your hand in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, so you know you had to be deliberate. You know, and a little bit sort of negative about horses. Perhaps more negative. You mark a horse that you know is probably a 15, 20 to 1. So you put it in 100 to 1 to get rid of 3%. You know. Mm.
Sure. Okay, so let's say we've got a 10-horse field.
Yeah.
You've got rid of half, so we're down to 5 horses. What are we doing next?
What we're doing next is, I suppose, you are formulating an order, if you like, and what price should they be. So, I mean, I hate to use the expression gut feeling because it sounds very unprofessional, but in a way, you're doing that a bit. You know, it's a gut feeling. Yeah. I reckon this is I won't say 6 to 4. I reckon there's a 250 chance or a 260 chance.
Just because you go back in your head and think about this type of horse, this profile horse in the park, this type of race at this track.
It'll be 1-1 or on the fence behind the lead or where it's got a lot of things in its favour. So I think then you sort of end up with your market. You know, I mean, that's basically you're trying to get from A to B. A is the speed map and B is what price should each horse be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you compare it to the official market, which these days are out at lunchtime on a Wednesday.
Mm.
In the old days, they were out 20 minutes before the race started.
Okay, so you've narrowed down to 5 possible horses. What happens if you've got 2 horses that look like they've got an equal chance? Would you ever back 2 horses?
Do those 2 horses represent value, Rich?
Yes.
Well, absolutely. I don't bet each one.
So you're not worried about.
No.
And would you be willing to take like 2 to 1 both horses? So you essentially end up with like $1.50 taking 66% of the market.
You know, it has happened where this is a dead set 2-horse race. I can't split them. I'll just try and get a quid out of the race. I mean, when I was punting for a living. So let's say from my early 20s through to 40 something, you know, I had a media career sort of, you know, alongside all of that. So, and eventually that was, you know, a bit more interesting. But so for 20 plus years, or 20, about 20 odd years, absolutely I would.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a quid in it.
So there was never a too small a price for you to take?
Just like the old man used to say, never.
Never take odds on a run upstairs.
But the bottom line is, you know, if it's $1.80 and you think it should be $1.50, of course you bet.
Yeah.
100%
you bet. Well, the school I'm from is there's no too short a price. Like,
yeah.
I've taken $1.03, $1.02.
I know. I've seen people take $1.20.
Mm.
You know, I have. You know, there's a famous, before your time, there was a famous punter named Eddie Birchley called the fireman.
Yeah.
He used to take 5. Yeah. I think
he was called the fireman because he was always taking odds on. Is that what the was different about?
I don't know, but I think he was end up casted in the end. I don't know what happened to him, but he didn't care what price they were. I saw him take 3s on at Mooney Valley one day, and you know, just kept piling it on.
Yeah,
and it won. So yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, if it's over the odds, it's over the odds.
Yes.
Doesn't matter whether it's 20 to 1 or you know, 4 to 6. Overs is overs.
So let's talk a bit about pricing. So we're getting close to the point where we can put some sort of a price together. We're down to our 5 horses, which, you know, we might even be able to slim down a little bit more. And how do you put a price to them? And are you still putting prices to them even to this day?
I think it's more in my head.
Yeah.
Do I sit there? Will I sit there tonight, Friday night, and price up 9 races or 6 races? It's unlikely,
uh-huh.
You know, but I probably know in my mind what each price is.
Mm-hmm. And you do it to do 100%, right?
Do it. You know, I reckon you can do 100% in your sleep these days. When you've been doing markets for that long, you know, if I do a market, like in springtime, like I spend a lot more time and a bit more clinical springtime. If I do a market and end up 120%, I kick myself. I said, what the hell are you thinking? Mm. How did you do that? How did you have that many horses in the betting, you know? Mm. I don't literally frame a market now, but I probably will, you know, once the footy's over and we're into the guts of the carnival, I'll probably do it for not every race. I wouldn't bother doing it. How do you price two-year-old races with unraced horses?
Yeah, impossible.
I look at their trials, I look at their jump outs, but I'm not saying I'm cynical of their trials, but there's two sorts of trial for a horse, one where the horse is under pressure and one when it's not.
Yeah.
So race day is pressure, usually. So you don't bother with them, you don't bother pricing staying races, I reckon. I might sound like I'm dirty on staying races, but, you know, they're so uninspiring in Melbourne, you know, for most of the year.
All right, Turf, so you've got us to the point where we can have a bet, which is fantastic.
Ready to launch?
Ready to launch. And before we sort of wrap everything up, can you let everyone out there know, young punters in particular, what's your one strongest piece of advice to them to try and back a winner on a Saturday, which is what we're all trying to do?
You see, you know, the markets these days are dictated, I think, a lot by groups like yourself, the modelers and so forth, algorithms and computers. For us, let's say sole traders, it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice, if you want to be serious about it, and given the markets we're betting into now, there's not really an alternative. You can't not be serious about it, unless you're treating it as more recreational. So if you are going to treat it serious and you want to get a quid out of it, the one word of advice we would be, don't take any shortcuts.
Sure.
You know, yes, look that horse up. Look up its video. Look up its who it beat, its opposition. You know, oh yes, I know you're sick of doing it and there's another three there to look at. Just look at them.
Mm.
Because there might be a little gem there, or there might be a horse you can say, well, it can't win.
Mm.
And it's cumbersome and it's labour intensive, but you cannot ever take a shortcut.
Mm.
And you don't have to bet in every race. That's the other thing.
Yep.
You know, you've got to, you know, am I proud of it? But, you know, to do the form for a meeting and throw the form guide in the bin when you've spent, let's say it's a midweek and spent 3 hours on it or 4 hours on it and chuck the form guide in the bin. I pat myself on the back if I do that.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be able, you know, there's no last race.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know, there's no last race. They're on again tomorrow or Monday or Wednesday. You know, there's another opportunity.
Yeah.
So no shortcuts. Be patient. There's always another race to bet on.
Love it. I think it's a perfect place to finish. Yeah. Thank you very much for being part of the Art of the Punt.
Cheers.
Good luck on Saturday.
Thanks, you
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Chances are you're about to lose. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.